So, Jimmy, you're not sick. Is that correct?
I have a deep voice all week. I don't know why. I don't know what's going on. But, I sound like you.
Sound like me?
In a world.
Like that.
It's not a bottle opener.
I'm glad you're not. I'm glad you're not sick. I hope you're not sick.
No, I feel fine. I just, for some reason, I lost my voice. I did a Patreon video this week, and the whole time on the safe door. It was a week ago when I was sitting with you guys, and I had to make that safe door for my workshop.
Yeah.
I didn't even know where I was going to put it when we were sitting here last week. I knew I just was going to restore the door and put a door jam on it. And then I looked at all the available spaces that I had, and that was like the only space that was easy to clear. Happened to be right near where I would have needed it. So it was funny. I said in the Patreon video, everyone's like, oh, you just cut through the wall so simply. That's how anybody can break into your shop. I was like, that is the only 3 feet of my entire shop wall that's not covered with machines or toolboxes. So you'd have to cut in through the roof because there's, like, you can cut a hole. You go ahead, cut a hole. You're going to have to move a giant toolbox or a machine or a pallet or something. So the entire perimeter of my walls of my shop are covered with stuff except for where the door is.
I don't know why you guys don't build your projects so they are 100% foolproof.
That's right.
I know.
It's funny. We had a sponsorship. We've had a couple recently for Simply Safe, and it's just they're not sponsoring this podcast, but they have sponsored a couple of videos, and it's a great security system. But like any security system, there's always a way around it, right? I mean, everything has some flaw. The flaw is that you have to take an illegal action to break the security system. And so, like, we had a few comments from people that are like, oh, well, all you have to do is this, you know, to jam the Wi-Fi or whatever. And I did some research. It turns out that's not really that. It's not as clear cut as they made it seem. But it's funny because the argument was like, why would you even use that security system when somebody could just create a Wi-Fi jammer specific to the frequency that your system is using and then get close enough to your building to use it to jam the system and then have to get through the lock. And then, you know, it's like, well, I guess they could take all of those illegal steps, but that's several illegal steps, and then they still have to break into the building. You know, come on, guys. It's okay. Like, it's like in your case. Yeah, all they have to do is cut a hole in the side of your building. Yeah, they have to cut a hole in the side of your building.
Or they could just drive a truck through the front door if they really want to get in.
Like, there's ridiculous. Much easier ways to get in.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Come on. You could drive. Well, you could
knock. You could just knock, and Jimmy will let you in.
That's true.
By the way, now I'm gonna put my forklift on the other side of the door with the forks at eye level high. So if you try and drive through my door, the forks are gonna puncture your face. So just keep that in mind for all you people out there.
You know, we were talking about you yesterday at the office, Jimmy. We were talking about something else entirely. But I was saying how, you know, like just the random stranger interacting, like, in a place that's precious to us, in our homes or in our yards or in our, you know, that there's a barrier that I think most people need to have between random strangers and where they are. You don't have that. And I've never understood that because you're just like, sure, yeah, come on over to my house, random person, hundreds of people or whatever. And Josh was talking about how he was up there one time and he didn't know you. And there was some event going on, I don't remember. And you just like invited him from wherever you guys were over to your house. And he was like, why are you inviting me over? Like, I don't know you. I don't know. You shouldn't allow me in, I guess was his sentiment. But
he was over at Tony's place with his, that was when he was living in the camper.
Yeah.
He was living the life of a nomad with his family in the camper.
Yeah. Anyway, we were just joking about you.
I get on the podcast with Andrew and Eric. We do the Fitzall podcast. Like Andrew always does a check in. He goes, Jimmy, how many random strangers are in your house right now? I'm like, oh, well, the other night this guy stayed here. Or that, you know, they have friends. Everybody's friends. Right now, my buddy Ryan, occasionally Ryan's in my stories. Ryan lives with me. He pays me rent. He lives in the house. He occasionally helps me with projects, but he doesn't work for me. So if like he's in the trailer part one video helping me, he just got into the project. He's a very good fabricator, but he's in between like life choices right now. And so he's staying here while he's recovering from his last bad choice of life. And he's staying, he's helping me. He's a really good fabricator. I met him years ago in the New York City shop. He started working in my New York City shop because the architect that I did a lot of work for rented space in my shop so that Ryan could fabricate stuff. So okay, like projects that I didn't want to do, Ryan would do them in my shop and his boss would pay me rent. And then when he split up with that guy stopped paying me rent. And then he just said, can I keep working here? So that's how he just kind of a holdover from one of my neighbors. And he occasionally, so when I'm on the podcast, he'll be like walking behind me, like making cereal. And Andrew's like, who's in your house now? Who is that now? I'm like, it's still Ryan. And a lot of people want to know where Willie went. Willie ended up moving to Baltimore to live with his sister. So Willie hasn't been around since around July. And he's down in Baltimore. But that's it. Just Ryan is the only random stranger that's currently in my house. During Maker Camp, my whole family stayed here and a few other friends stayed. And that was fun. But yeah, occasionally people pop in. But nowadays, you know, it's nice to... Besides Ryan just actually just went to Virginia last night to go see his family for the holidays. So he won't be around for a couple weeks. But, I'm alone now. Taylor and I just... You know, and the chickens and the cats, so everything's good.
Yeah. Cool.
But yeah, I don't know. I just keep my ice pick in hand when a stranger walks in. That's all.
You're like, come crazy. On over. I'll just hold this weapon to make sure everything's good.
No, so that's funny because Taylor and I, we've been very lucky. We, like, the people that come to our lives have been really good. And we've been looking for, we could talk a little bit more about this. It's kind of similar to a topic. We've been looking for like a full-time housekeeper because we just need like a house manager, someone that could manage the house. And so we put a Craigslist ad up and we want to try and find somebody that doesn't know anything about me or her, or, you know, just a complete stranger. And this guy came and she like, you know, they say the creep factor, you know, you get that creep factor. And he was going to help us. And then at the last minute, she changed her mind. So we currently don't have anybody right now to help us. And we were going to bring people in. We've brought people in and tried them for one day. You know, all right, you just got to like clean the whole house. And, you know, if it works out and you want to stick around, you're going to manage the outside, manage the chickens, like, you know, basically kind of what Willie did. But Willie kind of did it willy-nilly. He didn't have like a set schedule. That's kind of why we would bump heads, because Willie had his own schedule. And we'd be like, Willie, these are the 10 things that need to get done in a week. And he's like, oh, I want to do this. I'm like, okay, that has nothing to do with what we need done. But, you know, like when Willie would get mad at us, or like when we'd bump heads, he would go cut paths in the woods. He's like, I'm cutting a path to the back of the property now. I got things to do. So he would just go out in the woods with a machete and make a path like all the way to the beaver pond. I'm like, okay, I don't need that. Thank you. I don't need that. But that was just his escapism.
Huh.
So anyway, so we're trying to find somebody that's like a complete stranger, but as an employee situation. So, but I'm sure by the time, if it clicks, if they click, they'll probably be living in their own bedroom and being in my videos in probably about a week. But I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm too welcoming.
No, I didn't mean that at all in that way. I just meant that it's funny the difference between, like, I'm probably a little more guarded in that sense than I should be. I should probably be, whereas my wife is very like, hey, everybody, yeah, some random, you know, when we lived in Savannah, this guy and his two sons showed up at the house one time. And I was in California. We were all at Maker Fair. And they just showed up because they wanted to meet me at my house. And, like, it made me angry when I found out about it later on, because they didn't like email, they didn't call, they didn't ask, they didn't anything. They just showed up. She was there by herself. And she just opens the door and starts talking to random strangers, and she didn't let them in, but she was so nice to them. I was like, no, you don't do that. Like, you don't encourage that at all. That's not what you should do. But like I said, I'm probably a little more guarded in that way than I should be, but anyway, we were just joking around about how open you are with everybody, and it's great.
No, I've it's no secret that I see this guy as kind of like a life coach. That's kind of the simplest description. I've been seeing him for a long time. And, you know, he says I have no boundaries. He's like, you need to start developing some boundaries. He goes, you know, you help everybody. You know, if your agreement is to give somebody $100 for the day, you'll give them $200. He goes, that's not okay. He goes, you need to like set some boundaries, you know, and he says that, I forget exactly how he put it, but I'm like the type of guy that's like, I like apologize for like being me. You know, it's like I'm like too, I forget how he put it, but he said, just, you know, like you make an agreement with somebody, that's the agreement. Or you set a boundary, you say, you know what, we're going to meet and that's it. You're not going to get the, you're not going to, you know, see everything, you know, whatever it is. So I have to be more in line with like whatever the agreement is.
Well, I mean, even like, right there, as you're talking about hiring this new person for your house, like you should keep that in mind, you know? No, you don't need your own bedroom.
right. Well, Taylor and I would love, like, we would love like a live-in. Like we would like, we might even sponsor like somebody from Europe or South America. We would sponsor somebody. We would want to live in, you know, like, so that's ultimately what we would want because we have the room. We have plenty of rooms. We're not renting the house like we used to. We're probably not going to go back to classes like we did, not in the same exact way, because the house just can't handle having, you know, 15 people in it at the same time. And so if we were able to do that, that's something we've been considering. But we'd have to find the right person, you know, friend of a family, extended family member or something, somebody that doesn't know who I am, something like that. So that that excludes everybody in the audience. So,
wah, wah.
My mom has only been to my house one time, so I'm complete opposite over here.
Oh, wow.
Really? Wow. Does your mom live in the area?
Like 30 minutes away.
Oh, wow.
She doesn't like leaving the house. She's like me. Yeah. Always, we would just rather be home.
Yeah, I mean, I can identify with that, you know. I definitely enjoy whatever the space is. I enjoy being in my known spaces more than unknown spaces. You know, I'm fine to go to a new place. I mean, I like going to new places, but I'm always, if I had the choice between flying to some place and finding a new thing or staying home where all my stuff is and the people I know are, and like, yeah, I'll do that.
If that's the one thing the pandemic has brought me, it's the, like, because we were all on a treadmill for so long. It's like, especially me, I'd like run to any event that was available, whether I get paid or not. I just wanted to get my name out there and, you know, develop friendships that lead to sponsorships. You know, it's half business, half curiosity of meeting new people. And now I don't do that as much unless, you know, it's funny. Kevin O'Connor said to me when he was here, we worked together a couple of times doing this old house segments. And he goes, I don't go anywhere unless I'm getting paid. Other than that, I just stay home with my family. He goes, and he's got young kids and his wife. And he's like, I don't go anywhere unless I'm getting paid. He said, that's just how it has to be. You know, this is a business. And he says, I don't have time to socialize. I'd rather spend that time, precious time with my children. So,
yeah, I totally, totally agree with that. Cool. Well, what have you guys been doing? What have you been working on? Anything cool?
I could finish my segment quickly. I just started working on the interior of the trailer again. So Taylor and I are working together.
You keep saying that you're working on the trailer.
I started this week. I installed windows, floors, and Taylor has been my liaison with the client as far as picking all the interior parts. And now we probably got 50 boxes from Amazon of fittings, batteries, you know, the electrical conversion situation, all the stuff. So Taylor did all the dirty work because she likes doing the research and that stuff. And so we'll see where it goes from here. We definitely have to be done sometimes late in December. But that feeling, that fear of getting started is passed this week. So I'm feeling good about it. So that video will probably be out by Christmas time, I think. I mean, it has to be done by then. So it will be. Dave?
I'm 3 weeks late, but I'm working on this year's wedding rings.
Oh, wow.
And I got to use the, there's four of them here. We only need two, but,
I was going to ask about that.
There's just two of us in the marriage. But I want to make sure like every stage of the ring that there's always one I could screw up. Cause I'm doing things that I'm doing the unknown, but I broke out the mini lathe and used it for the first time. Actually, I made five of them and I got better with each one. I watched all of Quinn's videos, that entire playlist of the, it's so good. Like if you are thinking about getting a mini lathe, go watch Blondie Hack's playlist on it. It's so good. So, so they're right now they're curing. I just pulled them out of the UV. It's like the whatever that 3D printer UV curing station is. there in there because I used some UV epoxy on there. But the middle is I took some copper pipe and took a file to it, took all the shavings and then mixed that with some UV epoxy and then cured that on there. But the problem is all that copper in the epoxy is causing it to not cure correctly because the UV light can't hit it all. So one of the issues that I'm dealing with. But I've gotten a lot of new tools over the years, and it is always exciting to get a new tool. But it feels like it's just another thing to add to the business. There's something different about this lathe. It's like it feels like it's opening up a world of possibilities. Hmm. And once you get the hang of it, it just feels like I can do so much more now. It was like when I got the welder. It's like, oh, now I can glue pieces of metal together. Now I can cut things on a lathe. So the next tool is a milling machine.
So what's the biggest like operational difference? Like what's the big thing that you can do that you couldn't do before?
Cut metal. Like this is stainless steel. You know, on the CNC, I could always throw on aluminum or brass. I mean, and now I can cut. I could have done titanium, but I didn't want to do titanium for my very first project. And there's some videos out there that say you shouldn't use stainless steel for your very first project. Practice on aluminum or something, but I wanted to dive in head first. So it's just one of those things like, wow, I can do this now.
So it's kind of opening up more materials than
a
function, yeah. I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
So my limitation is space right now. This Impala it's an awesome thing to have, but it is totally in the way of everything that I want to do. So now the belt grinder and the miter saw and the metal cutting bandsaw, they're all blocked. I can't even get to them because the car is pushed over to one side of the garage so Kelly can get her car into the garage. So I got to figure out what I want to do about space, but it's pretty darn exciting.
You know what I bought yesterday, and I'm not sure that they're really good. I bought those things from Harbor Freight that you put under the wheels and you jack so the car lifts up enough so you can push it around.
That's what I have, yeah. It works really good. I think they sell two versions of it. There's like a cheaper version and then
the cheaper
Daytona
version.
Yeah. I got the Daytona one and it is really good, but to get the car started, all the little wheels have to be positioned a certain way.
It's
otherwise
hard.
By yourself, it is pretty hard. But once they all get aligned up, you can push the car anywhere you want. Anytime I go to move the Impala, I bring my truck up to the garage in case it wants to just wheel out of the garage and into the neighbor's house.
That's funny.
It does. There's a video online where some guy made like a pole that hooks to one of them, and then he can use that to push and pull the car around his garage. And so I want to do something like that so I can at least get to my tools.
Yeah, I got some of those for the Carmen Ghia so that when I lift the body off, I can put the chassis on those and just kind of like pull it out from underneath the body. You know, so it's so low profile that it doesn't need to be. The body doesn't have to be very high. I just want to separate them and then slide the guts out from underneath it.
Yeah.
But not there yet. Cool. Well, let's see. For me, we're actually skipping this week again. We just kind of ran into the thing again. Like, well, rather than trying to rush this video and get it done and make everybody, you know, kind of frantic to get the edit done in time, like, there's no reason to do that. So we're just going to skip this week, push it to next week. And then with Thanksgiving coming up, everybody's kind of traveling and stuff. So it'll just make that week and the following week less stressful. So just by pushing everything down the line a little bit. So trying to get better about that. And it's always a bummer not to put a video out, but whatever. That's just the way it is, you know? So, and in the meantime, you guys can see, nobody else can see. I've been working on my home office here now that Anthony and Josh have moved to the building. I'm trying to kind of reclaim this as my office. And so.
And a gray wall now. You painted both walls.
Yeah. Well, that one, the gray one has always been gray. This one's now like a dark blue. It's funny, that was unfinished drywall. And rather than just finishing the drywall, because I just really didn't want to, we had a bunch of sheets of eighth inch MDF. And so I just put them up on the wall and like glued and brad nailed them to the drywall and then cut little strips. So it's like board and batten, I guess is what you would call it. So it's just like a panel and then a strip to cover the joint. And it looks super nice. It's really lightweight material that went up there easily. I could take it down easily if I needed to, but took paint really well. So now I have like kind of a fancy wall, you know, and put some instruments and stuff in front of it as I move things into this room. But I'm also putting down, I put down carpet in here because it's just a concrete floor. And when we moved in, I rolled out some carpet, just really thin stuff. And it's taken a lot of wear with all of our chairs rolling around in here and everything. So part of this process is pulling it up and putting down carpet squares, which I've never done before. Because I figured it'd just be easier to swap out if something goes wrong. And they're going down super well. They're like, I mean, they're just carpet with tape on the back and you just like stick them down, but they're staying down. They're easy to line up. It's going to look pretty nice, I think.
That's funny. When I got carpet squares in my shop and I got a whole bunch of extras at the time in case I spill something or whatever, I have not replaced a single one. There are shellac stains everywhere. There's oil stains everywhere. I just gave up on it.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'd only replace it if like one tore or, you know, it was coming up and I was tripping on it or something like that. But yeah, I think at a shop, you got to expect you're going to get glue all over it and stuff.
Anyway. Yeah.
But anyway, so I'm working on this office and I'm working on a project that's going to go in here on one of the walls. And so I'm trying to finish preparing the room so that the thing can come in here and then we can shoot video, you know, of it in a space that's not like halfway renovated. But that's kind of what I've been up to. Nothing terribly interesting, nothing super new.
How are you doing on the car, Bob?
Do what?
What about the Karmann Ghia? How far along are you on that?
Honestly, I haven't touched it in quite a while. I got to a point to where I got the body cracked off of the chassis. And let me ask you a question here. So somebody yelled at me. Somebody commented about me calling it a chassis. Because it's a, I don't know. They said
unibody.
I said it wrong. It's a unibody,
right?
And it doesn't have a frame, so it's not a body and a frame. So wouldn't you call everything that was not the body the chassis, the collection of structural elements and wheels and everything? Wouldn't you call that a chassis?
Are they all integral, or is it different? Is there like an assembly for the front wheels, assembly for the back wheels, or is it all integral? Like you could roll it out from under, like you just
yeah, you could roll the whole thing out from underneath the body.
Yeah, so you might call it the subframe.
Yeah, but it's not really a frame. That's the thing. It's a center column, and then off of that column, you know, both of the axles, the body pans are welded, or the floor pans are welded to that, but they're not not structural by themselves. I don't know. Anyway.
Maybe you call it the sub-assembly to satisfy that idiot.
I'm just going to call it chassis.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, that's what it is. It's not, you know, it's the remaining parts of the car underneath the body. The body is a unibody.
Just call it the Wang Dang Doodle and just say that's what I'm calling
it. There you go. Yeah.
Just make a name up for it.
Make up some German word for it.
Yeah.
And like, yeah.
I called the jigsaw a wiggle saw in my video. Nobody commented
at all.
Nobody. I thought.
Oh, that's great.
And I called it like that's what it's called. And nobody called me out on that. So I'm a little disappointed in everybody that watched.
Yeah. Every single time I pick up the, now I'm finally used to calling it the oscillating tool. I call it the, and I shake my hand because I can never know what it's called.
We call it a zerp zerp.
And it's funny because even on Nick Offerman paid enough attention because when we were on, everybody uses it on the TV show that we did, the Making It show. And, when Nick was, they did this thing with Nick, we're like, guess what tool it is? And they put one in his hand blindfolded. Amy put one in his hand blindfolded. And he goes, well, Jimmy calls it the tool. And he recognized that I had said that several times. I was really, thought that was funny. That's actually in the video clip, I think, if it made it to the YouTube channel. But I'm finally remembering that it's called the oscillating tool. So, but yeah, just give your chassis, just look up a German word and just say it with, absolute deadpan confidence next time.
Yeah. I should. Anyway, to your question, I cracked the body and the rest of the car apart. We'll call it that. And
the
I
bottom
stopped
shell
there. You know, I'd cut
the rolling bottom shell.
I kind of cut out most of the electrical because I'm not going to use any of it. I got a new wiring harness and everything. So some of that is kind of hard to get to until they are actually separated, until I get it onto the rotisserie. I just can't get to things to get them pulled through. But pretty much everything else is out of it. I've started stripping paint on the doors and the engine lid on the back. But I'm going to have somebody come and he's doing some glass blasting. And so he's going to do the body. And I think at the same time, I'm just going to have him take the hood and the trunk lid and the doors and everything out there and just have him like finish off whatever I can't get. Because the inside of the doors is pretty hard to get to.
Yeah.
With, it would be easier with a sandblaster or glass blaster. So that's kind of where it's at. And I'm about to start building the rotisserie. I've got some pieces that I ordered from Send Cut Send. And then I just need to go to the steel yard and pick up, like, I have my materials list. I have the design and everything. I just got to go do it. And it's another one of those, I think I talked about this last week, where like jumping into a thing that I technically know how to do, it's modeled, it's theoretical, but now it comes down to.
So you're going to fab the rotisserie for the body?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, there's a bunch of different ways to do that. And I've kind of mutated several different designs into something that I think will work for me for this car. It's not like one that you could use for every single car, but theoretically it's right. But then when it comes down to actually making, because the two separate pieces, right, you got to make one for both ends and they have to pretty much match. They have to work the same and they have to, you have to do them both before you can find out if either one is really right. So
let me ask you a curiosity question. Will you have the, so the body's going to basically be held like a big hot dog or chicken on a rotisserie.
Yeah.
To create an illusion. And then will that body be centered in the pivot? Like, are you going to have like drop mounts so that like it go and then zig down halfway through like the mass of the car and then connect to the body mount so that when you turn it alone, it'll turn somewhat balanced and won't just flop upside down?
Yeah, it's not going to be perfectly centered on the center of gravity.
But close to it.
But it'll be close, yeah. Right. And the way that you can do math to figure that out per car, but this car is known enough and it's been renovated by so many people.
Sure,
that
sure, you can guess
people
it.
Say like, they point to the front of the car and they're like, well, center of gravity is about right here, you know? And so.
Right, that's cool.
And also the body is lightweight enough that even if it weren't centered or it was really far off, you're still not really working against that much weight. I can lift from the front of the car. I can lift the body by myself. Right. Now, I mean, I couldn't get it off of the car, but I can lift it up.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, it's not that much weight. And I'm also making some locking plates in the end of each one so that when I rotate it to a certain point, I can drive in some pins, lock it in that position, and then I can reinforce, you know, if I needed to put like a stick down to hold it off the ground, to fight against the turning or something like that. So I'm going to have to address all that stuff in the video about, you know, not calculating the actual center of gravity and center of mass, whatever you would call it. But it'll be close. So
That's cool. I never thought about it.
And that's kind of the thing is like, I think it's close. I don't know. I haven't built it yet. And once I build it, it's too late to... If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. So
this is, if it becomes too much of a problem, you could just weld a rod in the opposite direction of the weight so you could put some counterweights on it.
Yeah, that's a good idea. One of the things that I've seen a lot of the people use for this is instead of making a grounded rotisserie frame that is then attached to the car, they actually weld an entire cage around the car. So I've seen this with Volkswagen buses a lot because, you know, they're like shaped like a brick. And people will make these huge hoops that are the diameter is twice as wide as the car-ish, somewhere around there. And so they basically just make a frame around the car that can roll So you can get on the outside of it and you've got this big wheel and you can just roll the van over to whatever position you want. And then you just put in like chocks underneath this wheel to stop it from rolling and you get it in the position you want. You gotta have a lot of room to do that.
Yeah.
Unless you put those on some sort of bearing so it's rolling in place. I guess you could do that as well. But
I was in a boat builder's shop and he had a hull of a big giant boat that he was making all in wood, but he was now shaping all the wooden slats and he had these two huge wooden wheels and the boat was suspended inside that. And he would just pull and push on wherever he wanted because he had it sitting on two other rollers. So each giant wheel was sitting on rollers on the ground and he had it all centered. So he could just pull and tug on the turn it to any position he wanted as he was shaping the hull.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And I mean, I did think about that. I got a tube bender a while ago where I actually could make those big rings, but I don't know. This seems like an easier thing because for what I need to do to the car, if I was able to keep the car in one place and do everything I needed right there, I'd be fine. But I actually have to pull it out into the field to have this guy come sandblast it. So I have to be able to get the car onto the rotisserie, hook the rotisserie, the two ends of it together so that it's one big assembly. The whole thing has to be on wheels. I have to roll the thing off the concrete into the grass, into the field, you know, have him blast it, treat it out there, and then roll it back in. And I mean, I guess you could put wheels on anything, but it seemed easier to do this one than the other one. And the way that I'm making the ends is pretty common. It's not like I'm doing anything unique, but the actual fork parts that go into the car are swappable. So if I ever did get a different car that I wanted to use the same thing for, I don't have to remake the entire structure on either side, just the part that actually goes in and connects to the car. So I can kind of swap those out.
Yeah.
So, and that would be harder, you know, if you were making a big wheel, like you're talking about, to put around a bus and a Karmann Ghia and a Land Cruiser are all very, very different sizes. So that one wheel wouldn't be as flexible. So
you're going to do a Land Cruiser body?
I'd love to. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. So if anybody has an old FJ 45, that's what I'd like. That's the long ones. If somebody has one of those, that's not a total rust heap that they want to get rid of, let me know.
Nice.
I'll put it.
What
in the
year
barn.
Would that be? What year would that be?
Do what?
What years would that be?
What years? I mean, I think they actually, some places you could probably still buy one new, but I don't know. They started in the maybe 60s.
Oh, really?
Maybe. And made them up until the 80s, early 90s. Because Land Cruisers are weird. The new models are only available in certain countries. And then the old ones that are like tried and true, they just keep getting produced in other parts of the world forever and ever and ever, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Right. Anyway,
so if somebody has one of those, I'm not going to do it anytime soon, but I am keeping an eye out for the future.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. We had a topic. What was our topic? Oh yeah. We got a message from one of our Patreon supporters. And you know what I was thinking about we should do? We should put up a post on Patreon where Patreon members can leave topic suggestions. They often send them in, but like we should actually pull questions from them. I don't know why we've never done that before, but we should totally
episode 400 right? Finally got a good idea.
It one takes of these a days to we're gonna sometimes figure out what we're doing. Anyway, so we got this message from Steven. Hey, Steven. And he said some really nice stuff. He started his own business. And he said it's growing to the point where he thinks he needs to hire full-time or part-time employees. He'd be really interested to know the turning point for me when I hired a team, when Dave brought Dan on with the business to help with the business, and if Jimmy will bring on anyone else full-time again. So it might be interesting to talk about, like, getting help, you know, and getting at what point that makes sense or how we made that transition. I've been talking for a while, so I'm gonna let somebody else go first.
It's funny.
It's hard.
Dave, you
it
go.
It is hard.
You go. I got a couple of ideas.
It's really hard to give up. If you're a one man business, it's really hard to give up tasks to other people, especially tasks that you think that you're good at. So I could really use help in the graphic design department and also updating the website and other things. And down the road, Kelly is going to go part-time and help me out. But that's way, way down the road. But I went to school for graphic design, so I feel like I'm not... It is... Graphic design is one of those things, if you don't always think about it and you don't always do it, you'll lose kind of that skill. You might always know what good design is, but coming up with good design, you have to be in that mindset all the time. Like when I was a graphic designer, constantly looking at billboards, judging every single magazine ad. And now I don't do that. I'm looking at other things. But it's so hard to give that up because somebody else has to produce your vision. And I've interviewed a couple people, and I'm just like, no, I'm not ready to do it yet. So making that decision for me is super hard.
Can I jump in on that Go topic ahead. Right there? So yeah. I was talking to a friend of mine who does YouTube and podcasts and stuff. I don't want to call him out, but I was talking to him last week, and he was saying the same thing. He was like, I need to hire this person to do this thing and this person to do this thing, but I don't want to give up. I don't want the vision to change. I don't want, you know, it's not going to be the same. And I've heard most of the people we know who have an editor or a videographer or something have had that same feeling. And my response to him was, I felt the same way, but as soon as I found somebody to come in and start shooting, somebody to come in and start editing, I realized that just because I have an idea and it's good doesn't mean it's best, or doesn't mean it's the only good. And so mm-hmm. I found that having Anthony come in and run the camera, it added a different flavor and a different thing that I never could have gotten by myself. Same yep. for editing.
I was going to say the same thing about graphic design. Sometimes I like having people do my graphic design because it's different than what I would have done.
Right.
Because I would just always go down the same old path. I'd lean on the same fonts. I'd lean on the same styling. That's why, like, I did a couple of posters for the knife and for the razor blade. I had my buddy Doug do it because Doug has a different look than mine. I just gave him a genre, and he ran with it and came up with those posters.
I think we all think that our vision is, you know, it's obviously, it's our vision. It's the thing that we want to exist. But that doesn't mean it's the only thing. And so mm-hmm. I was trying to encourage him, and this isn't necessarily to you, David. I was just, it made me think of it. Like, I was trying to encourage him. Sometimes your vision can be part of something bigger and better, but you have to give somebody yeah. else a chance to come in and, you know, flesh it out or add to it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's collaborative.
I totally agree with that. And, you know, like I was mentioning, if you don't do graphic design every day, if it's not something that you're super passionate about, you lose a little bit of that skill. I know if I brought somebody else on to do all that, it would be way better than what I could do. But it's giving up that control. And then there's also the fear of commitment. Now I've got to pay somebody and I got to keep them busy and they are counting on me to pay the bills. That's terrifying to me.
Yeah. Well, people keep asking me if I'm going to take in somebody new. And the way it keeps happening is, the way it's happened for me is, it's always been very natural. The way David Welder came into my life, he was a student of mine. And then the way Brett came into my life, and there've been other assistants before YouTube. And there was a kid named Keith worked for me for a long time. And then it got to a point where it's almost like, I feel like I'm like a mentor in a way that where like I'll nurture somebody until it's time for them to either do their own thing or move on to like a more substantial job than being my personal assistant. And I have to be careful going forward to find somebody that, again, Aaron was the perfect fit, because Aaron, even though he was an artist, and I truly believe that he was an artist at heart, what gave him joy was helping me and helping others. I have to be careful not to hire another artist that wants to create art, but then becomes resentful of the day to day. You know, people mm-hmm. want to be around me, and because I'm obviously always creating art, and I welcome an artist. But if it's somebody like, even some people have come to me that are really genuine artists, they're like, hey, it would be cool. I'm like, I want to tell them, you're an artist. You shouldn't be sweeping my floors. I mean, that is a path to success, obviously. You know, a lot of people start in the mailroom or whatever you might want to call it. But it's really important that I get somebody that wants to be fulfilled or that is fulfilled in being like a tech guy, being like helping me on the CNC, helping me here, helping me there, as opposed to somebody that is genuinely born as an artist that wants to be around art, but is willing to, you know, for lack of a better term, eat crow to get to be exposed to the art. Whereas eating the crow is what I need somebody to really want to do.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, so it's a little difficult for me because a lot of artists come to me and they're like, I would love to help you. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. But, you know, for your good, for your better good, I think you should continue to be an artist and, you know, do whatever it is that you're doing now. Just do that more often and you know, maybe get a small part-time job that's, I don't know. It's a tough call. But like I said, a lot of people come to me that I feel are better suited to be an artist than a shop assistant.
There are stepping stones, and then there are the right stepping stones and the wrong stepping stones.
Well, I guess you want somebody that's artistically inclined, but is fulfilled being like, I can't say it any better than the way Aaron said it. Aaron said, you're a jet pilot and I'm a jet mechanic, and I enjoy fiddling with the mechanics. You enjoy taking the stuff and abusing it. And that's why it was a perfect fit, because Aaron loved doing research. He loved like finding that one part that needed to be the thing that solved the problem that we had for a project. You know, he felt being part of the team. He was like, he loved being a part of the team, and obviously a very important part of the team. And, you know, he never wanted to shine. He was always very, very timid on Instagram and stuff. And I would always encourage him to be a little bit more out there. And, yeah, I just got to be careful. The next person that comes into my life, and I don't want to say the person that I choose, because, you know, like I said, it's always been very natural the way people have come into my life. I am, though, enjoying my free time, because I'll wake up and I have a to-do list, and on that to-do list no longer is making sure that that other person is doing something or feeling fulfilled that they have something to do. You know, it's not necessarily like I'm wasting money. I want to make sure that they're busy. I want to make sure that they're happy being busy. That was really always my thing. Like, you know, Mike, the fireman, is helping me out considerably now. But he's a fireman, so he works full time. So Mike is just like on call whenever he feels like coming. He knows there's always stuff to do. But I want to make sure it's stuff that he enjoys doing. And he constantly keeps telling me, don't worry, I'm happy, I'm fine. I'm like, you don't mind folding 6,000 posters that are going to get a razor blade stuck in them? He's like, no, this is what I'm here for. I'm like, okay. You know, because I feel responsible. This is part of what I was talking about in the beginning, how my life coach is like, that's the agreement. Stop overthinking it. Like, can I rub your feet while you fold the posters just so you feel happy? You know, so that's another big, that's really my thing. This is part of what I talk to my life coach about, is like, I want to make sure that somebody that comes to me is fulfilled, even if it's just sweeping the floors. Is that I want to make sure that that's what you really want to do, that you're happy doing that, or happy figuring out the CNC, or happy organizing the shelf. You know, some people really get enjoyment out of organizing things. I'm not even saying that sarcastically. I mean that 100% honestly. Like Ryan, the kid that lives with me, he loves organizing shelves. I'm like, he'll have a couple of beers and like he'll sit there for hours and organize the shelf. I'm like, that's great. If you enjoy doing that, then do it.
I think what you're saying is it's not about you like apologizing or whatever. That's being a leader. In my mind, like I have kind of a clear definition of what leadership is. One of the things that we have to do as a leader, as a business owner, as a father, as a community leader, whatever, is to make sure that you are enabling people to do the thing that they're meant to do. And like, I feel that exactly what you're saying with my guys that I work with, say my guys, like the guys that I work with, my team is what I mean there, is that I feel like oftentimes I'm in the way of them doing their job. Anthony films. And if I'm not there to be filmed, he's not able to film for the most part. And so that's always been a struggle for me. And I'm saying this, I guess, to Steven, who asked the question, you know, make sure that you have a healthy understanding of where your responsibility lies to an employee. Their job is their job, and they should be able to do that. Make sure that you're not in the way of them not being able to do their job. Because I find that in myself a lot. And so like, if I need to take time off, or I need to come to the house and goof around for a little while just to clear my mind, there's part of me in the back that's like, yeah, but that means that I'm not allowing Anthony to do his job. And that's just an example of one of the things. because I'm not there. I'm not ready to be filmed. I'm not ready for the project to move to the next level or whatever. And that's kind of true, but it's also kind of not true. It's kind of like, you know, employees are adults who chose to have a job, like you're saying. They chose to be there for this. This is the situation. This is the agreement. This is what the job is. And that doesn't mean that they're going to be doing that 100% of the time. Sometimes they also have to sweep the floor. Sometimes they have to copy files from one place to another. There's other stuff to do. And so, yeah, I'm with you in that that is a thing that I feel a lot, like a responsibility to make sure that they can do their job and I'm not in the way of that. And it's just something you have to think about as you're hiring different jobs, as you know, people to serve different purposes within your organization. Is that going to rely on you? If so, is that okay? You know, maybe it's not. Like my agent, I have a guy that I work with that handles all the business, you know, like sponsorships and stuff. We were talking about hiring one time and he was like, you know what you really need? Is a personal assistant. You need somebody there to do all the things that you need done. And my immediate thought was, I could never keep somebody busy like that. Like there's no, I don't have enough dry cleaning to pick up that I could like say, hey, can you go, you know what I mean? Like I don't have that stuff to offload to somebody else. And that was one of those examples of, yeah, that's a job that I could give somebody, but it wouldn't be a good job. I don't have enough there. I wouldn't be able to offer them enough to make that job worthwhile for them. And I think that's what you're saying kind of with the artist thing. You wouldn't, the thing that you could offer somebody to fill that job is not necessarily what they would be wanting out of it. So to Steven or anybody else thinking, I think that's a consideration when you're hiring. It's not just about having more hands. It's making sure you have the right hands for the right thing.
And you want to make sure that that person is healthy in the way that they get to see you play all day long, you know, like we have the dream job. We get to play all day long. You know, I get to make sure that, you know, I can figure out the next thing that's going to make the next $10,000, the next $10,000. It's so much fun. It's like I'm playing all day long, trying to figure out how I'm going to tap another $10,000, another $10,000. It's so much fun. Looks like fun. It's very stressful. It's, you know, I've been a freelancer my whole life. And like I said, I'm just basically like creating $10,000 at a time out of midair. It's like obviously very stressful. And, you know, at the same time, laying out $5,000 here and $4,000 there for materials. And, you know, it's a juggling act. It looks like a lot of fun and I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world, but you got to be careful. You might get somebody that looks like you're having a lot of fun when they're like, fracking.
Yeah, I'm sweeping.
Fracking fracking floor.
One thing that I like to keep in mind is as I grew up working for graphic designers and agencies, both part-time and full-time, is it always felt like I would be disappointing somebody if I left that job to move on to something else. And so anytime I have somebody work for me, I want it to be super clear that I want to be the stepping stone for you to move on to the next thing. When it's time for you to move on to another job, don't feel guilty. Do what you have to do. Do what's best for you. And I was happy that I was there for that period of time. And so it's something, anytime I'm going to hire somebody, I want to stress, like, I know this is temporary. Never feel guilty for trying to better your life by looking for something bigger or better.
I've been on the other end of that, where when I was at Dell, I was doing software development. It was a great job. I got paid well. And I had this manager who was super nice. And I had, they were cutting people, like they had to let people go. And I was never on that list of people who had to get let go. And I always felt a little bad about that because I knew that there was this YouTube thing that I was doing like off in the side. And like, I mean, I could make a living. Like I'd be okay. If I got let go, I could make a living with that and I'd be okay. And so I had this like little bit of guilt about, or not guilt, but you know, I felt bad for the other people who had lost their jobs and stuff. And so I was kind of sticking with it, even though I wasn't really that into it anymore, just because it was a great opportunity and it was a good job. And I had this manager who one time in one of our, I've probably told this story before, one of our one-on-one calls, you know, where your manager checks in with you, make sure everything's all right. He was like, hey, I saw your YouTube videos. And I'm like, oh no. Like, he knows I have this other thing and now I'm going to get let go. Cause you know, and he was so cool about it in that he said something to the effect of, he was like, man, that's really what you're meant to do, isn't it? And I was like,
well, that's a weird question.
Yeah. I was like, this is loaded. Cause if I say yes, and he's like, good, you're fired. But he was like, you're really good at that. You're really meant to do that, aren't you? And I'm like, well, I think so. And he goes, awesome. Well, whenever you need to move on to that, you let us know. We'll be okay. And it was the same thing that you're saying. And it was like such a cool, it was encouraging, but it wasn't like, I'm going to use this as a way to force you out or like hold it against you in your job. It was like, you can do this as long as you need to, and then move on to the thing that you're meant to do. And that felt really good from somebody who honestly was holding my job in their hands, who could have let me go at any time because he had to make cuts constantly, you know? And it was a really cool moment of being encouraged to eventually do something when I was ready to do it. And it meant a lot. That's stuck with me for many years. Another thing I wanted to kind of say here, part of Steven's question was when to hire people. And I know for me, so Forby started working part-time for me pretty early on, like one day a week he would do editing for the videos. But there's, and as part-time work, that's a pretty great way to do it. You know, it's not a real heavy load. It's not a heavy financial burden. One day a week or a couple days a week is something that was manageable. But then when we moved here, I felt completely overloaded in that, like, I just can't, even with him editing, I can't shoot stuff and renovate a house and this and this and this. And it was just too much stuff at one time. And it worked out that Josh came through and was able to take some of that load so he signed on for like a 3-month contract and we were just going to see how it worked. And so we had a potential out for either one of us at the end of that 3 months. If he wasn't into it, no hard feelings. If I didn't think it worked or I couldn't afford it, no hard feelings. And so that was a good way to test it out. Full-time contract for 3 months. And it turned out that it worked great and he's been around for like 4 years now. But the thing that I was going to bring up was that I don't think I started looking for help until it was already, not going to say too late, but I needed help way before I started looking for it. I was already spent. I was already completely wiped out. I was already maxed. And that looking for help, looking for somebody to come in, take some of that is another task that you have to do on top of already being overloaded. So if you are thinking, if you have a business and you're thinking that maybe someday you're going to need to start hiring employees or, you know, in the next 6 months or something like that, you should start looking now, even passively, because like Jimmy was saying, sometimes you just kind of wait around until the right person shows up and it's not something you can necessarily force. You can't put a Craigslist ad for exactly what you want and find the perfect person. It takes time and it takes effort to find somebody that's a good fit. Sometimes you have to test people and they don't work and you have to find somebody else. And to do all that when you're already completely maxed out and, you know, that makes it even harder. So that's a little bit of advice there. If you think that's in your future, go ahead and start the process because it will take some time.
One of the things that I struggle with is, and I hated this back when I was back in the ad agency days, is we are looking for a web developer, but we're also looking for a web developer who can write and do these other things that are not related to web developing, because of course you want the super person.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking, man, I want a graphic designer, but I also want somebody who can write and who knows a little bit, who can also update the website and sweep the floors, right? So that's the thing that I'm struggling with now, because I don't know that I have enough hours for somebody to do just those one things. I need a Swiss Army knife of a person, but that's going to be super hard to find. And that's also where I'm not punishing them by, they might have this amazing graphic design skill, but they also have to sweep the floor. That That stinks.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, it is like whatever the expectation is set for the job up front, you know, if they know that's part of it. And like Jimmy's done where he has somebody come in and work, but also makes his empire accessible to them. You know, the people that come in and work for you also get to use your tools.
And
make videos.
And I want them to. Yeah.
Or whatever. That might be a perk in that situation, David, where, you know, you could say like, I may not have enough work to keep you full time, but maybe you work part time and then you have access to this thing that I have or whatever, you know, just an idea. We're almost at an hour here. Any other thoughts on hiring people or?
I guess the other thing that's important too, is you just got to make sure you like them. You don't want to hire somebody ultimately you don't like for one reason or another. It's funny when, I'm not going to discuss politics, but when Aaron came and started hanging out with me and he goes, I had no idea what your politics were. He goes, I'm glad they are what they are, because we were very much in line and we would discuss politics all the time. I mean, I remember, you know, certain events, we were listening to the news when certain historical events have occurred, and it was very bonding for the two of us to listen. I don't even want to say what these events were, but you know, there was certain events on the radio that were taking place, and Aaron and I were like, whoa, you know, like, we kind of connected on that level. And, you know, that's just an example. I'm not saying you have to have the same exact politics as anybody you hang out with, and I certainly don't. But, you know, it was, he said, I wouldn't have known what to do, because I was, when I came and realized I was going to spend, you know, this much time here, I started to think like, God, what if we're not aligned politically? Because he's very opinionated. And, you know, like I said, we were in the same page most of the time. So
there's the other side of that too. Like Dan and I are really good friends. We're constantly texting each other and showing off what we're doing or sharing things. What if there's a time where I'm like, we got to split, and then you have to tell your friend that, you know, we can't work together anymore. So I don't know. So I personally don't know, like, do I throw up a barrier or am I looking for a friend?
Yeah. I mean, that's a tough thing. I remember at one of my previous jobs, like when we had a web development agency, I only ever had to fire somebody once. And the other times people left because they were moving or, you know, like their contract was ended and it wasn't like a big deal or whatever. But this one contentious, look, man, this is not working because of how you're acting. Well, you know, whatever. And that was really, really hard. Not because I didn't like the guy, but he was not doing what he said he would do. He was making it harder for everybody else to do what they needed to do. But outside of those particular situations, like, we all got along and we were friends. And if we all went out to dinner after work, none of that stuff carried into it. And so it was really weird to like take off the friend hat in that moment, put on the boss hat and be like, look, you're screwing up. And
you can't wear flippers to work anymore. I told you this.
We've tried this. You know, we've given you all the chances. That's enough. And now you have to go. And that felt
like... What are you doing
like,
at 6 o'clock? You want to go get a beer?
It was tough though, because like you have to wear both of in that situation, you have to be both of those things. I mean, you can't be, well, I guess you could be like just a boss and not a friend at all, but what fun is that? Like the people are people. You want to be with people. And yeah, I mean, it's a tough thing, but at the same time, when it comes down to it, I mean, you're still signing the checks. You're still ultimately asking them to do a thing for money. And if they don't do that thing for the money, then you have to address it. Otherwise, you're just a pushover and you're throwing away the money, you know? So it's hard, but that is the thing that you will deal with for sure.
Just got to manifest good stuff. That's it.
And I think, honestly, one of the problems in that particular situation, just to go back to that real quick, one of the problems was that we didn't, kind of like what I was saying earlier, we didn't really start addressing it until it became a big problem. And we did address it a few times before we had to let him go. But like, we probably should have addressed it before it was an issue. Like the first time we saw him acting a certain way, we should have been like, hey man, let's not do that here. Just to set the, you know, before it's a big deal. And so I think part of dealing with expectations of your employees or of teamwork or of the attitude of, you know, how people are together is just mentioning the expectation before it's a really big deal. You know, this is silly, but we're all guys that work together. And some guys don't put the toilet seat down, or they don't pick the toilet seat up. But I keep telling the guys, or I have told them over the years, since the beginning, one of these days, we're going to have a female work here. And I don't want us to have to change our culture because all of a sudden there's a female working here. I want it to be comfortable. I want the expectation to be there already. And so we're going to act and take care of our facility and all that stuff as if there's a woman working here, and we're going to be respectful to her, even though she's not here yet. And that's one of those things that, like, it's not a big deal yet, but it would be a big deal if, excuse me, a female employee came to me and said, hey, there's pee all over the toilet seat. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I would feel terrible about that. So dealing with those things before they're a real problem, even if they never even show up to become a real problem, like, that's something that is important to me. And we try to set some expectations there. And it was interesting moving into the building, because that was one of the discussions we had. Like, we have to, even outside of the male female thing, it's just, this is a place that's going to be an office for potentially other people. And we want to make sure that it's comfortable, and we think ahead and we plan for how many people are going to need to eat here. Like, how many chairs do we need? How many, you know, how do we set this up to be something for future people to be comfortable in? So another thing to think about. All right, you guys got anything else on this?
Oh my.
That was a good conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can talk about nothing forever. Good at it. All right. Well, I want to say big thanks to Steven for that question and for being one of our Patreon supporters. That's awesome. And we are really grateful for you. We've got some really awesome messages lately from people at Patreon. Thank you for all those. And I haven't responded to all of them, but I read them, and then I often send them on to the other guys and they read them.
Absolutely.
So thank you.
Thank you.
And that was Steven Daugherty. I never know how to say that last name. Daugherty. That's it. That's got to be it. I hit it in there somewhere. But I'm going to also pull out a random Patreon supporter like Stephen Booker. Big thanks to Stephen Booker as well.
Thank you,
but our top
Booker
supporters are Odin Leather Goods, Full Steam Designs, Rich at Lowen Designs, Blondie Hacks, which David mentioned earlier, Funkiss Artistic Creations, You Can Make This Too, Chad from Mancrafting, Works by Solo, Albers Woodworks, and Corey Ward. There's a whole big list of other people, and we are thankful for every single one of you. And you all get the after show.
Thank you.
I don't know what we're talking about today, but I'll tell what I...
Obviously, it's going to be secret stuff.
Yeah, it's secret stuff. I'll talk about what we didn't put out this week that's going to come out next week, which I think is a lot of fun. So the after show is a separate podcast feed that you only get once you support us on Patreon. You log in there, you get the little feed. You can take that feed URL and put it in your podcast player, and then you get the after show. That's how it works. It's like magic. And if you want to join that crew of people, go to patreon.com/makingit. We would really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. You guys got some cool stuff to recommend?
Anyone? I got something. I didn't watch it yet, but I know the story.
It's probably good.
No, it's going to be good. It's Practical Engineering. Do you guys watch Practical Engineering?
Oh, yeah.
The guy with the hard hat meme. Yep. And it came up in my suggested. I watch his other stuff, but I didn't watch this yet. But I know the story of the Leaning Tower in San Francisco. You guys know Millennium Tower is starting to lean. It's a giant, expensive residential building that's like 70 stories tall that is leaning. And they don't know what to do. And it's right in the middle of the city. And I'm so fascinated these days. I drove past New York this weekend. I didn't go into New York. I drove past it. My mind is blown by the amount of tall buildings that have showed up in New York since I moved out. There's like three buildings that looks like if you would like look at the skyline and then hold a pencil up to the vision, it's incredible to me. These buildings are like, they seem as tall as the Empire State Building or the World Trade Center, but they're half the girth or less than half the girth. And it blows my mind that like all that weight. At what point, how can that weight not support itself anymore? You know what I mean? It's like a corn stalk is works perfectly at 6 feet tall. If you make it 9 feet tall, It's just going to give up and break off. So I'm totally amazed at the engineering that they hope is going to work for the next 100 years on these buildings. Like, how these buildings are going to just eventually go, you know what? I'm done. I'm just going to lay down. That's what I think when I see these buildings in Manhattan. Like, they are so tall and so skinny. There's got, like, the concept of a building being wide at the bottom and getting skinnier as it goes up is a pyramid. And that's like the old buildings of the Art Deco era. They were wide on the bottom and they got skinnier as they went up. Now it's just skinny all the way up. It's going to break off at the root. I guarantee it. That's my prediction. But watch this.
They probably haven't thought it through.
I don't think so. So this Leaning Tower in San Francisco, I've seen the story several times and I'm very curious to watch this one. They put it on mush and they're like, oh, it's another couple of $100 million to mush all the way down to the bedrock, 300 feet below. Let's just go deep enough into the mush and it'll be fine. And they put the building up and now it's starting to lean in the mush. And they're trying to keep it from leaning by, they're like, okay, let's, it's leaning in this direction. Let's just put rods that go down past the mush into the hard bedrock 300 feet below. But now they have to drill 70 holes, like probably 12, 15 feet in diameter, 300 feet. And as they're doing it, they're loosening the dirt that it's sitting on. So while they're drilling holes, it's starting to lean more. It is fascinating to me. And there are apartments in this building that are selling for $40, $50 million, and you could put a marble on the floor and it'll rush all the way to the other side of the apartment. And there are apartments that are $40, $50 million apartments on like one whole floor. And so the building has got millions of dollars of real estate in it. It's like right in downtown of San Francisco. And it's leaning. So, and they don't know what to do. I mean, they're just trying to avoid the inevitable, which is they're just going to have to take the building down eventually.
No, but they just tie a whole bunch of balloons to the top of it with helium in them, and then it just keeps the top from falling over because it keeps it safe.
I guarantee you that idea came up in the boardroom when they're sitting there because they are so desperate, they don't know what to do. It's like, put a big cable and attach it to the bridge. That's what's going to ultimately happen because...
Tie it to the moon.
You know, like a tree you see in Manhattan, like they try and train a tree to like grow in a certain direction. So they put these sticks on both sides and put the cables between them. That's what they're going to have to do ultimately. So anyway, check it out. I'm really anxious to watch this. I saw it pop up this morning and Practical Engineering. What really happened to the Millennial Tower? 13 minutes long. So
cool.
My pick. And I'm not sure if I have suggested this before. I don't think I have. It's Unnecessary Inventions. I think I first saw him on TikTok or Instagram in short video form. And he has a YouTube channel. And it is...
It's really good.
Perfectly named. It is Unnecessary Inventions. And it is
some of them are actually really good. Like the one, he has one where like you cover the cold shower head until you're ready to move it.
Yeah.
That one was good.
He's incredibly smart. Like, we joked around about a topic today of we're out of ideas. We joked around about having that as a topic. And I look at his channel, I'm like, how does he come up with so many crazy outlandish ideas? They're just so good. And he's really good on camera. And he's got a really cool studio. The videos are well made. It's well lit. It's binge worthy.
You know what's great about that channel, and I'm just going to overanalyze it for one second. We all come up with ideas. Even everybody listening comes up with ideas. And you always come up with that idea that's funny while you're brainstorming. You're like, wouldn't it be funny if he stops right there?
Yeah, yeah, and exactly.
You know what I mean? We're all coming up, and like you're trying to come up with a serious idea, even if it's seriously, but still funny. You come up with the most outlandish stuff. He stops right there and makes it, which is great.
Yeah, that's like the pendulum swing, like where you take an idea way too far, you let it come back, and then you find the thing that's closer to the middle. That's the reality. Yeah, you're right. He stops on the outside of that swing. That's great.
Yeah, there's a magnet on the end of that just catches the ball and sticks.
He probably has invented that. All right, so mine's a little bit different. Stick with me. Let me finish explaining it before you judge what it is, okay? My friend Matt Whitman is on a couple of podcasts. He does one called No Instructions. Sorry, that's my podcast. He does one called No Dumb Questions with Destin from Smarter Every Day. He has another one called the 10-Minute Bible Hour podcast. This is a podcast that's about 10, 15 minutes every day, and he's going through a book of the Bible. I know that's not everybody's thing, but the thing that's really cool about it is that he has a background in humanities and history and art. And so he goes through this as a historical document and explains the context in which all of the stuff is happening. And so it's not like a, it's absolutely not a beat you over the head with a Bible, kind of like make me, you know, think what I think kind of, it's not that. And so I think it's a really good, like whether you're into it or not, whether you believe it or not, that's not the point. The point is here's a historical thing that has a bunch of historical context that it makes a lot more sense if you know what was happening in the world around it, who it was written to, things like that. And I was talking to somebody else about this because I listen to this show all the time when I'm running. I've learned more about history listening to this podcast than I ever did in school, ever. Like all sorts of stuff, Roman, Greek, Hebrew, all sorts of things. I know more about geography than I did before I started listening to the podcast because he's explaining where things are in relation to each other. And it's just one of those things that is not, you know, at first glance, people have like an expectation about what a Bible-focused thing would be, what its purpose is. And Matt is awesome. He's thoughtful. He's fair. And he's really, really good at taking stuff that we don't necessarily as a modern audience have the context for and applying it. And he has lots of like, it's called the 10-Minute Bible Hour podcast. And he's taking a book of the Bible and he's going through it. He's on like 450 episodes of a single book. It's just really, it's really good and really well done. And I love Matt. I mean, Matt is a friend of mine. He's great. And I guess I just wanted to bring that up because I know the expectation that goes with, you know, when you say the word Bible, it carries weight, different weight to different people. I get that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, you know, before we end the episode, I hope I'm doing this redundancy. Another Woodshop podcast. I was on it a couple weeks ago and the guys were great. We met at Maker Camp. Go check out another Woodshop podcast. Graz is the latest episode. My buddy Graz, who we shot the television show together. And I'm on the previous episode to that. So go check out the guys at another Woodshop podcast.
Cool. I still don't have headphones. So if you're getting echo, I apologize, but we're going to wrap it up anyway. So,
yep.
Cool. Well, you guys got anything else?
I'm good.
Thanks, everybody.
Anybody from Europe want to come here? Work for me. Just kidding. Nobody from the audience.
Yeah. If anybody, anybody in Toledo who listens to this, who happens to be an amazing graphic designer, writer, floor sweeper, and website updater, please email me.
That's good.
But you have to be in Toledo.
Website updater.
Cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.
Later.
Love you. Bye.